Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 1st of November, recording at 8:20 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is a big-picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick look at what's going on here right now, and perhaps more importantly, even what people are actually talking about. You will have noticed that there's a bit of a debate going on today regarding whether Wall Street is showing some bubble conditions. Now, this inevitably happens from time to time, and over the decades, what has always been clear to me is that the people who are long, let alone leveraged, will say, of course these are not bubble conditions, you're being irrational. And they give you a whole string of reasons to justify why the market should go higher, including the probability of P/E ratio expansion, which is the greater fool theory, I think, as I mentioned in last night's audio as well. And then there are other people who will point out, bubblicious conditions in certain sectors of the stock markets. And I will lead off with an article here today by Jonathan Wheel for Bloomberg. And the headline is Fed's Bubble Alarm Stuck on Snooze. Now, the people who fundamentally identify bubbles early on are proved usually to be quite wrong for at least a number of months, as at least in the case of a genuine bubble, as it goes on inflating for various reasons. And that is a clear possibility in this current environment, because the most important fundamental indicator by far, as I have said thousands of times over the year in the service, is monetary policy. And monetary policy is still a big tailwind, not least from the influential Federal Reserve, and that affects the whole world. But we've also got low interest rates in most countries. There are a few that are exceptions, India, for instance. But generally speaking, this is a very accommodative environment as far as monetary policy is concerned, and that can very easily drive markets higher, and quite likely will, unless we get into the actual tapering sooner rather than later. And the consensus view is that that isn't going to happen until next year, and probably not before the first quarter, if then. I won't pretend to guess what the Fed is likely to be concerned with, but we know what some of their guidelines are, the 2.5% inflation rate. Let's take that one first. I don't think that's going to be challenged. Looking at the continuous commodity index, that's down to 506. I've been mentioning that almost daily. It's a good commodity index, and CCI is the code for it if you want to have a look at that. And this is still in a lengthy medium-term downward trend, and it is certainly about to challenge those lows, previous lows, in the 500 psychological region. And looking at the chart at the moment, if it isn't going to break downwards, it's all for the bulls to prove. In other words, we need to see some clear upward dynamic, which has certainly not been evident on that chart for a while now. So I think that the 2.5% inflation figure mentioned by the Fed is going to be safe for a little while longer, so that won't trigger the actual tightening. And then the unemployment figures won't either. And I've said on a long-term basis that we were going to see a more difficult time for employment because of the phenomenal technological developments that are actually taking place. And that won't affect the service industries quite as much. Retailers would be a classic example, for instance. But it will certainly affect, and is certainly affecting, manufacturing in a very, very big way. And in, as far as the retail industries are concerned, in terms of storing and moving moving product around, there the robotics will be playing, continue to play a bigger part and going forward. And so the point is that there are basically fewer jobs available, and companies will be biased towards the machine, for which they do not have to pay health care, which the machine doesn't get sick, and it can work 24 hours a day if necessary. Okay, so I don't think that the Fed's two guidelines are going to be triggered in here quickly, but might they be concerned that asset prices are getting a little bit too high or too frothy? And I would, in their shoes, and I think a fair number of other people would as well. But we will see. And the weakness of that commodity index that I mentioned is also a sign that we have a soft global economy still. I don't think there's been too much doubt about that. But we get a lot of optimistic comments in terms of GDP growth. We had those at the beginning of this year, and they haven't really played out. And we've had a lot of optimistic comments about GDP growth in terms of next year. But remember, you know, we're only sort of and barely 5 years, if you go back to the first quarter of 2009, we're only 5 years into a recovery, rather a faltering recovery overall. And that's typical of credit crisis recessions, as I've often mentioned before in these broadcasts, in the sense that the real economic historians have long pointed out that it takes at least 5 to 7 years for global GDP growth to get back to anything like normal following a credit crisis recession. And the obvious reason for that is that if a lot of people are unemployed, I beg your pardon, if a lot of people are deleveraging, I meant to say, if they're deleveraging, then they're actually going to be attempting to save more and certainly spend less overall. And corporations also will go into a survival mode, as we've seen over the last 4 to 5 years. And so they're more cautious, not hiring people at the same rate, not spending quite so much money. So the economy is going to struggle unless you get a fair stimulus coming from the government, or usually coming from the Federal Reserve, and that's what we've actually been seeing. Now, getting back to this talk of do we have signs of a bubble, I think that those who are going to oppose that view will point out some of the extreme excesses, such as the tech, you know, when we had the old economy versus the new economy talk back in 1999 and 2000, and we had a lot of these tech companies on infinity multiples. In other words, they didn't have any earnings. And we certainly don't have that environment here today, but that was a massive tech bubble, as we know, and that's not what we should be actually comparing it with. What we can say, I think quite unemotionally and objectively, is that today, November 1st, 2013, the market is, and stock markets generally, are a good deal more expensive than they were a year ago. Now, not all stock markets and not all sectors, But if we take the U.S. stock market first, since that's the most influential one, that when you get the S&P multiple, which is now, it's been up near the 17 level and slightly below that right now, that is clearly more expensive than it was actually a year ago. And we also have some frothy conditions that we can see. Some of the valuations in so-called momentum, high growth potential stocks, whether they're LinkedIn, Facebook, Tesla Motor, Netflix, these are at minimum the early signs of overall bubbly conditions. So I'd be a little careful here in the short term. That doesn't mean that the market won't go on higher, because we still have that big tailwind in terms of monetary policy. But if we see the Fed continue to aggressively pump this money in, I think that stock markets will definitely push higher. That will make them a bit more expensive against this slow growth economy, and that will increase the risk that when we actually get to the tapering, that we will see some pretty choppy conditions, and that would mean some big overall reactions. And I think that those who reassure us and say, well, that's unlikely to happen because investors will be happy because the fact that the tapering is coming in means that the Fed is assuming that the growth momentum is sufficient to be self-feeding, and therefore I'm going to be getting better earnings for my shares. Well, we hope that's the case. It's not actually guaranteed. We could have something else trigger the Fed's action. But the point is that investors are, in bidding up valuations, are borrowing from the future. And that will lead to a bigger setback when the next disappointment sets in, as is always the case in these market environments. Okay, so what else is going on in here right now? We saw a jump in the bond yields here today, the long-dated government bond yields, and that 10-year, U.S. 10-year, was up quite sharply. I can't remember what it was. So I will put it up and tell you. Discussing this with Owen earlier today about how talking and chewing gum at the same time can be fairly tricky, but here it is at 2.62. Now, we were down at 2.47 near the low in the latter part of October. And actually, 3 days ago, we were still down near that 2.47 level. So this is a bit of an upward dynamic in here on the yield. And these bonds, I've described the action as being in a lengthy pullback and consolidation phase. And there is, I would say, at least a 50-50 chance, at least, that we've seen the low during that process near the near that 2.47. We won't have clear evidence of that until the yields have pushed back up higher. But this is a bear market. This is the early stages of a bear market characterized by these rising yields. And as I said before, we're in this medium-term consolidation. The yields pushed up to 3% in early September on that 10-year before coming back all the way back down to the 2.47. And I would expect several more weeks at least, and possibly a few more months of actual ranging before we see these push higher still. I don't think it's a worry in the short term. because of those falling commodity prices, because of the continuing QE that we will actually be seeing, and because of the generally slow growth here overall. Another development that's taken place here quite recently is the dollar's recovery. The dollar had been quite soft during the best of the stock market gains in recent weeks. And we saw the U.S. dollar index, that's DXY on the charts, and that's measures against the European currencies. And we saw that go from a high up around the 85, 86 level down to 79, which is previous floor area. Did that quite recently, and for the last 6 days, I believe, it's been rallying from that level. Good move up here yesterday and also today, and it's currently at 80.71, nearly 70. It's 80.72 as I speak. And I suspect there are some shorts that are getting squeezed in here right now. But what the implications of this firmer dollar, that often happens when people are a little bit more nervous about what's going on in the rest of the world. And we may see a little more of that. But in terms of knock-on effects, this is the reversal of a tailwind. Weak dollar was a tailwind for the precious metals and many other commodity prices, but particularly the precious metals, and it's now become a headwind. And while this dollar is rallying, it'll be interesting to see how far these ranging precious metals retreat. Now, I've been saying for quite some time that, I'm going to put up another chart again, that the precious metals were in an overall, looked like support building phase. I think we had that V bottom right at the end of June, and when they got down to, when gold, for instance, got down to 1180, I think on the low, slightly 1180, and then rallied sharply, getting up to about 1437, it looks like, or close enough. And then ranging sideways to somewhat lower, and it's currently at 1334. So right in the middle, right smack in the middle of that range overall. Looks to me like a V-bottom, as I said, and right-hand extension bottoming out process. But there are some big institutions that are talking about gold breaking down even lower. That may just be short talk, bear talk, or it may be very, very informed advice. It's for you to decide, and I don't know. But at this stage, I think I've said before that precious metals, certainly down near the lows that we saw at the end of June and the beginning of July, are much, much closer, in my opinion, to a floor than a significant new ceiling. But we're probably going to get a lot more sideways ranging activity, and the weakness of the CCI may also weigh on gold. It just means that commodities are out of favor. People would much rather go in and buy one of these techie stocks that are understandably considerably more glamorous in many respects. Okay. Crude oil has been interesting, and we have seen further slippage in here today. Actually, it's quite sharp. Moves down 94.63 for the WEI. That's down $1.75. And the Brent, which had been holding up, it was right near that just $110 level. It's down 284 here today to 106. So that's a clear downward dynamic overall. Is that a sign of somewhat slower growth, and also, of course, more supply? And the short answer there is yes. This won't trouble the Fed. It is an indicator, as I've already mentioned, along with all these commodities, of slower growth than had generally been predicted. Okay, what happens again on the medium to longer term? Well, I think that the period that we can identify looking forward, that medium-term choppy danger period, is going to be the earlier stages of the unwinding of the QE. And it all depends how big influence that is on markets, or how big the reactions that we see occur, will depend on what happens before we get to that initial tapering. In other words, if markets were relatively subdued, then, in other words, if they drifted, pulled back a little bit, just ranged quietly, then it would have less of an impact on the downside, although I think there would still certainly be some impact. On the other hand, if we get bubbly conditions and people keep extrapolating their targets to the upside, and if the S&P goes on up to 1800 by the year end, then it'll be more vulnerable to a bigger pullback as that QE actually commences. But I think the worst of the shocks will be during the first half of that QE reduction. Then people will get used to it, and if the Fed's actually continuing with the QE reduction, it'll be because they are also reasonably hopeful that GDP growth will continue to improve. But that is the hurdle or series of hurdles that we have ahead of us. And I've been mentioning this for a number of months now. Beyond that, I think we'll be in quite a bullish environment. And the main reasons that I've mentioned for that, the most important one by far, is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And that is just a huge story. And it's really, as we watch it unfold, or as I watch it unfold, it just seems like a lot of science fiction topics are being realized in terms of the speed of the technological innovation. People don't always appreciate that the process is actually accelerating, but just look at what's happened to the technology that you actually have in your possession, in all probability, over the last 10 years. I mean, the improvements and changes have been absolutely enormous. And the rate of this improvement is exponential, because we're getting all the little tiny sensors and other breakthrough devices that are leading to ever more miniaturization. Logically, there's no reason why technological innovation has to stop. We've been seeing it since the dawn of man, only it took centuries before people first learned how to get a decent covering over their heads, and then how they learned to take a stick and turn it into a club, and then you go on a few million years and how they learned to actually create fire. That was a massive advance, so on. But the point I'm trying to make is it took forever, whereas now the changes are actually startling and very exciting. And I think that's going to, as I've said on many occasions, that the main beneficiaries, we will all benefit from that. Some people will also be disadvantaged, not by the technology items that they actually can or will own or can own, but that it's competition with certain jobs. And so it will keep, I feel, those unemployment levels somewhat higher than governments would hope for, because jobs will be replaced by machines more quickly than new jobs can be found for all of those workers. But I don't want to digress. The big beneficiaries here will be corporations, and that's a strong secular bull market argument for shares once we get beyond all the QE tapering and resume to a more normal overall growth pattern. And I think we certainly will resume an overall stronger growth pattern, and technology will be one of, if not the biggest contributor to that actual process. And I've also said that energy prices would need to be lower across the boards than in real terms, at least inflation-adjusted terms, than we've seen in the last few years. Well, I'm hopeful that that will still be the case because of the renewables to a certain extent. But currently, the situation is quite patchy. The U.S. is a huge beneficiary of lower energy costs because it invented and developed the process of fracking, whereas other countries went mad about windmills and are paying the price, and they've either banned fracking or they banned nuclear, and they're suffering from higher wages. Will that all be sorted out over the next 7 years of this, 6 years of this decade? Probably. I think that we will see 6 years from now somewhat lower energy costs in real terms, and that would be a big driver of a global secular bull market in share prices. And then, of course, there are the autonomies, which Owen and I can never tire of talking about, but those are those big multinational companies that have outgrown their native countries or countries of origin and are big players benefiting from the rise of the global middle classes. That's a huge bullish long-term theme. And on that note, I think I've probably gone on long enough, so I would just say to you, have a fantastic weekend and all the very best.